save the earth.
The Three Divas.
With style and mirth.
The Three Divas.
Got your every need.
The Three Divas.
To keep you healthy and green.
The Three Divas.
They got green dudes too.
The Three Divas.
With more green news. You got to believe us. Listen to the Green Divas. Green Divas Radio Show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
And I'll try not to cough, sneeze, or, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to catch what you've got. Somehow we end up catching each other's
ailments
over virtual reality, or not virtual reality.
I know.
But
like
over Skype.
One day, you know, you've got like a tummy bug, and then the next day I'm like, what? How did this happen?
We're not even together. You're in Jersey, I'm in Chicagoland.
Like, what is
bizarre.
That, 600, 1,200
Power
miles?
Power of suggestion.
I know. We're crazy. Anyway, so, wow. We've got a really, we always have. I just feel like I repeat myself. People think I'm insincere, but I'm not. We do have an amazing show, but.
Yes, we do.
Before we even get into that, I want to just take a moment and ask people listening to make sure that they're following us. And Lynn will – she's our sort of social media diva.
I call myself an enabler, social media enabler because of my own addiction. So.
Oh, my God. I almost coughed and laughed at the same time. Sneeze, cough, laugh. That was funny.
Well, you know, I'm funny once in a while.
No, you're always good. And that's the thing. Like on social media, we'd appreciate your following for a lot of reasons, but we promise to entertain and share really good information as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah, on Twitter and Instagram, you can find us at The Green Divas. On Twitter, we have a few different accounts, including GD Green Dude, who is a real smart arse.
Yeah, he's a smart aleck. Yeah.
Green Diva Lynn, that's me, of course, and Green Diva Meg.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we also have a YouTube channel. We're on Google. We're on Facebook. On those, you just search The Green Divas, and boom, you'll find us.
It's really that easy.
We have a lot of great information, of course, on our blog as well.
Yeah.
TheGreenDivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com.
Yeah, and like for Twitter and Instagram, it is THEGreenDivas at THEGreenDivas most of the time. And if you Google The Green Divas, you'll find us.
Yes, you will.
And we appreciate it, and we certainly want
to give us a shout out on any of those.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll follow you back or whatever.
Well, we're remarkably interactive Green Divas, aren't we?
Yes, it's been a little light lately. But we're going to be charging back out there.
Yeah. So
but we've always got something going on. So
we do, and we do appreciate those of you who already are engaged with us and out there following us. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. So moving on to all the excitement of today. Today, as a matter of fact, not all of our interviews happen the same day. Hate to shatter the illusion, but
it's. Everybody's like just crying now.
I know. You know what? We used to do a live show, and it literally, you know, was live, and the whole hour was done, from start to finish in 1 hour, and whatever happened, which was.
Speaking of time, can you hear my clock in the background ticking away?
Yeah, sorry.
It's really loud. Can you hear that?
Oh no, I thought you were telling me to like shut up and move on.
No. I literally, I've got a clock. And
yeah,
if we're
do.
Not quick, it's going to start gonging.
I've heard that. Okay, so anyhow.
Well, we have 20 minutes
today,
before that happens.
Today, I got to speak to Jeff Goodell, who in our world, okay, as, you know, media people, journalist wannabe in my case, I don't really consider myself a journalist necessarily.
I'm a journalist wannabe too. I just don't think I'm of that caliber.
But he's like this amazing award-winning He's a Rolling Stone contributing editor and award-winning book author. But anyway, I'm stumbling because as I did in my conversation with him, because I was like, oh, starstruck.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we've talked to him before, he's a really great guy, very accessible. But he had an exclusive interview with President Obama, flew to Alaska,
right.
Spent an hour in a classroom with him, but also got to travel.
In the classroom.
Well, they were doing I think he was doing a speech at a school.
Oh, okay.
And either before
I'm picturing
or after.
Them both sitting in little kids'
I know.
Seats.
Yeah, I know.
Like
I know, me
really
too.
Low to the ground.
Right. And so, but he also got time to travel around with him in Alaska and you know, see the various places that Obama went while he was there in this Arctic sort of mission. And there's footage on the video. He does a video. They do like a documentary-style 9-minute report, and there's video of them walking and talking. And Jeff just cavalierly looks over and says, doesn't this stuff scare the shit out of you sometimes? And I'm like, wow, how cool is that? You can talk to the president. And President Obama just sort of casually chuckles and said, yes, well, there's a lot of things across my desk that are sort of terrifying.
Oh, man.
He didn't use the swear word that Jeff did, but I just loved that Jeff was really – and – if you read the article, and I recommend that you do, you will see the tone. Jeff does not shy away from difficult questions,
mm-hmm.
and we talk about that. So please, you know, Jeff is a really interesting guy who's on the front lines and obviously had an intimate moment or two with our president about these issues. So
yeah, I think I had emailed him. To get him on the show again, and he was in the middle of all this. He's like, I'm working on a big project, so follow up in a few weeks.
Yeah, hello.
And then I saw the article came out. I'm like, okay, that must have been his big project. Now I'm going to talk to him.
Good timing.
And here we are. So
there's that, and you got to listen to that if nothing else. And we also have a Green Divas Health and Beauty with Rachel Sarnoff.
Mom, I love Rachel.
Mommy Greenest about henna and our hair, and I'm very convinced I might try some.
Yeah.
Foodie File with Diana Rice, our Meatless Monday registered dietitian, who is talking about school lunches.
Which I don't even get me started on school lunches, but go ahead.
You're a teenager. You know what you're going to do. No. We have an at-home segment with one of our new contributors who we will be regular, Lisa Barris.
Yeah, with the Ron and Lisa show.
Yeah, and she's talking about some healthy home hacks. And that's a lot. That's a lot, people.
Good stuff. And we'll have our normal Earth Matters with Bill Curtis, Yale Climate Connections.
Yeah.
So, and shall we sing now? Do we have time for a little song?
This is one of the rare shows we didn't break into song for some reason, right? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Isn't that Johnny Carson or something?
How did you hear that? I didn't
know. Because you sang it.
I didn't know it would be recognizable. I thought nobody's going to know what that is.
I almost said around the clock. And then I'm thinking, I've been around the bush. But no, I've been around the block.
Oh, my God. We have gone off the trail. This is great. All right, folks. Listen up. It's a great show. And have a great green week.
Bye-bye.
Looking for low-stress ways to create a healthier, non-toxic environment in your home? The Green Divas make it fun and easy with useful information for making a beautiful and eco-friendly Green Diva home.
Back with one of our favorite Green Divas of the Home, Lisa Barris of Ron and Lisa, who are the Healthy Home Dream Team. Lisa is an author and expert, and you can find out more about her on ronandlisa.com, all spelled out. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Meg?
I'm good. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, likewise.
And every time I talk, I just want to, like, I get very selfish because I'm like, oh, what about this? And what about that? And so one of the things I think what we're going to talk about today is healthy home hacks for reusing stuff to save a little money and that are healthy and eco-friendly.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. We were talking about how some of these upgrades are expensive, like buying an organic mattress and things like that. So with the money you're going to save with my tips today, you can start creating your little nest egg to get your organic mattress
and your air purifier
and all of those good things for your home.
Yay! Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's kind of a no-brainer to say no to disposable plastic bags. baggies for storing food. So the average family is spending about $85 a year on disposable plastic baggies. That's according to Sierra Club.
Wow.
And, you know, they make our lives convenient, of course, but when we discard them, we've got a lot of waste and we're using our resources.
Yes.
So there's a lot of brands that now make reusable sandwich bags that can extend their life. One is Blue Avocado. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they have reusable sealed bags that are PVC, lead, and BPA free.
Wow.
Now, if you use just one of those bags at least twice a week, you can eliminate over 100 disposable plastic baggies a year.
Wow.
And right now we've got about 20 million disposable snack bags that keep ending up in our landfills.
Yeah,
so,
and let's just remind people that plastic is one of those things that doesn't biodegrade. It stays around,
right.
They're estimating 500 to 1,000 years. We don't know yet.
Yes. I've heard that as well.
And so much of the plastic that supposedly is in a landfill ends up in our waterways and in our oceans.
Oh, and let's not even get into the issues with the plastic
with
marine life.
Exactly.
Yeah, the turtles are getting entangled, and this is causing havoc on everything.
So anything we can do to reduce our plastic usage is good.
Is good. It's a step in the right direction. There's another, I mean, you can save hundreds of dollars a year just by going to these reusable Ziplocs. And number two is the Baggy Wash. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're a small company. They make a device that goes into your dishwasher where you can put your existing plastic bags in there and wash them. And they also have a dryer, a nice wooden rack where you can dry these baggies out. And they estimate that their bags, you can reuse your bags 50 times. And by doing so, each time you do that, it'll keep 1,500 bags out of the landfills and the oceans, and it'll save you $150.
Wow.
So in over your lifetime, you're going to save hundreds of dollars with just that one tip.
Now, I had that baggy wash thing. Have you ever used that?
I have not used it.
It's a little complicated. Now, I had a very early version of it, like way back when they started in 2006 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little complicated. I was like, oh, my God, I need, like, an engineer to figure out how to work this. I love the concept. I'm hoping that it's a little easier than it was to use back then. I still have all the bits, but I have no idea how to put it back together.
Well, and you know, I'm about convenience. I'm a busy woman, and you are too. And I know a lot of the listeners, we work, and we don't have time to do a lot of this stuff. So, you know, that's why the resealable, reusable bag might be a better option. And that's probably the direction I would go, just because...
But I don't want to be entirely
time-consuming.
Discouraging, because they may have updated the design a little bit to make it a little easier.
Yeah. I'm a big proponent of making your own cleaning products, but
yes.
At the same time, I have a lot of my favorite over-the-counter brands because, let's face it, we don't always have time to make everything, even though it's fairly quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to do what works for your lifestyle,
right.
And there's always a healthier choice, probably, than what you're doing. So that's just... to take that little piece of information and just say, what can I do that could, you know, make a difference today? And that's what we want to leave you with.
Well,
and moving, what was that?
No, go ahead.
Moving on to paper towels, which is another big waste. So a great solution is to use microfiber towels. Microfiber towels do a better job of picking up dirt and grease. They don't scratch surfaces. They don't leave lint behind like a paper towel would, and they can be washed about 50 times.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're using, right now, if you're using a roll of paper towel a week at about $1.25 a roll, you're spending $70 a year, whereas the microfiber towels, you're going to save about $50 every year just by switching. You say about $20 you'd spend for 36 towels.
Yeah.
And this is just kind of an easy, easy fix.
Yeah, and what I do is I actually have a variety of different dish towels, and I have them hanging over my sink in these baskets, so
mm-hmm.
I can just reach up and grab one, and I use it a handful of times unless I'm picking up something nasty.
Yeah,
And then I just throw it in the wash, and it doesn't take up a lot of energy to throw it with the rest of the wash.
Right, exactly.
The
amount of paper napkins and paper towels that people are... You know, you see, there was a great YouTube video I saw, and the guy shows you how to properly dry your hands. So you have so you use less paper towels, even in a public place.
Yeah.
And you have to shake your hand out. You know, you have to really shake it over the sink to get all that water. And that's where most of the waste is coming from, is because we're not shaking our hands. So I thought that was a great video.
That's funny. Yeah, we've talked about paper towels and a lot because, yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing.
It's a thing. It's a thing. And then these are little savings that can really start to add up, you know.
Yeah.
And then rechargeable batteries. If you're not using rechargeable batteries, you know, start that switch today. This is, once you start using them, you're going to say, well, how did I not use these before? Oh, my goodness. So my favorite is the Eneloop by Sanyo. They sell them everywhere. Costco sells them. And they can be charged, I think it's about 1,500 times each, each battery.
Wow.
You'll pay about $21 for a four-pack. It comes with the charger, and you're going to be spending about a half a cent per battery use compared to a standard AA alkaline, which you'd spend about 75 cents to a dollar.
Ooh.
So over the long, this is the fact. So $21 for a four-pack versus $15 to $16 for a 16-pack of Energizer. Long-term savings of about $983 over the battery's lifetime.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's you know, and for all the little remotes and the things, you know.
Oh, my gosh. It's just great. I mean, I use them. I love them.
Yes.
So that's a simple, fun thing you can do.
We have. I don't think I have the brand that you talked about, but, you know, we definitely have some.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so many great brands, and the new ones are actually pre-charged, and they're ultra-low self-charge. So they're even more energy efficient than the predecessors. So, you know, just look for those. There's so many great brands now. And, of course, you know, something so simple is taking your own bag to the store, your own reusable cloth bag. I was in Hawaii. Ron and I were there over the holidays last year, and Hawaii has a ban on plastic bags. It's really funny when you go to the store, they don't give you anything. They don't give you. You're on your own. And it's great. It's wonderful. So you have to keep one in your car. You know, invest one time in that cloth bag or get a produce bag and then keep all those bags out of the landfill.
And once you get used to it, it took me a couple of years of literally forgetting and going, oh, God, they're still in my car. But once I got used to it, now I'm, you know, they're just, I've always got some amount of bags in every car and every purse. You know, there's just
something. Yeah, it's good. Keep them in your car and then you'll never be without. And we were talking about the, you know, the sea life being exposed to those plastic bags too. 86% of the sea turtles have had problems with entanglement or ingestion of marine debris.
Yeah, it's
and
really
people
upsetting.
People aren't recycling their bags, so that's an issue too. When they have regular bags, they're not recycling them. So we've got to. That's something so simple. And if you're a coffee drinker or a bottled water drinker, it goes without saying that you would want to be using a reusable coffee cup or a stainless steel or a glass bottle for your home filtered water, not your tap water.
Exactly.
And not your very overpriced, expensive bottled water that likely is not that much better than your tap water.
Oh,
anyway.
Don't even get us going. Don't get us going on that one because you
don't
know.
Get us going. We don't have time.
It's another conspiracy, I'm telling you. Well, Lisa, it's always fun to talk, and we could talk all day, but I know that we'll get to talk to you again soon. And in the meantime, people can go to Lisa, ronandlisa.com, and I'm sure Lisa and Ron will share a couple of posts to go along with this segment and others.
Absolutely.
So in the meantime, have a great day, and stay tuned.
Find out more about this Green Divas at Home segment and lots of other great low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green at thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. On any workday, visit a commuter parking lot in the Washington, D.C. region, and you'll see people stopping to give complete strangers a ride into town. Called slugging, the practice is a form of casual carpooling that's surprisingly organized and efficient. The slugs, those looking for a free ride, form lines according to their desired destinations. Then drivers pull up, shout out where they're going, and the first couple of slugs pile in the car. There's no exchange of money, and aside from any clarification about drop-off spots, there is rarely much talking on the way into the city. It's a mutually beneficial system. The slugs get a free ride to work, and the drivers, with their cars full of people, can use the high occupancy lanes. Lewis Johnson, who slugs his way into work at the Pentagon every day, says the system makes his commute significantly shorter.
In Washington, D.C., you could spend an extra hour on the roads just in the regular lane, so the HOV lane is usually much more free-flowing.
Casual carpooling has been going on in the D.C. region for about 40 years, and is found in other major cities like San Francisco. So it's not a new way for commuters to save time and money. But with climate change, it's become even more significant, since it keeps cars off the road and helps commuters reduce their own carbon emissions. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
Well, it's been a little while since we spoke to our fabulous Green Divas foodie, Diana Rice, who's the registered dietitian for Meatless Monday. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Meg.
Well, and I'll just tell folks, you know, why you've been so scarce, because you've been busy having a baby.
Yeah, very busy. I just got back from maternity leave, and I'm jumping right back into it. But yeah, she's keeping me busy.
Very, very exciting. Congratulations. You have a little girl named Ainsley?
Yeah, that's it.
Aw. Well,
yeah, she's adorable.
All right, so you're allowed to take some time to play, but we're happy, happy to have you back. And it is that time of year when most parents, not with tiny ones, but most parents are sending happily their children back to school.
right.
But, you know, making sure your kids are eating as healthy as possible when you send them off to school isn't always so easy. So what advice do you have for us in that regard?
Sure. Well, you know, I grew up as a brown bagger lunch kid. You know, I rarely bought the school lunch meals, not because it wasn't good, but just because, you know, I really liked, you know, bringing my own food. And, you know, for a kid to bring their own lunch gives them a little bit more say in, you know, what they're going to have to eat that day. And
right.
That's a really great way to get kids to try healthy foods, is to, you know, give them some input. So although our Meatless Monday campaign is active nationwide in the cafeteria lines of, you know, tons and tons of public schools, sending kids with the Meatless Monday lunch, you know, in their brown bag is also a great way to get some healthy food into them and help them, you know, enjoy all the benefits of Meatless Monday, environmental and health benefits.
So you get them involved while they're young, like picking out what kind of snacks and what kind of, you know, food they want. What do you recommend?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm also the registered dietitian on staff with our sister campaign to Meatless Monday, which is called the Kids Cook Monday.
Oh.
And, you know, that one's really close to my heart because it's all about getting kids involved in what they're eating and setting aside one day a week to cook together. So one thing you could do is, you know, of course, cooking dinner together is great and sharing family meals are really important, but you could get the kids together and decide to make a big batch of something that you're going to send in the lunchbox that week. It could be like a pasta salad. And
right.
You can get really creative. You know, whole grain pasta is great, but ask the kids, what else should we put in there? You know, see what's in season at the farmer's market and let them make those choices. And then they're going to be more inclined to, you know, be excited to eat it once they open it up in their lunchbox, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Now, and it works. This is a great way to, you know, start when they're young. And then as they get a little older, of course, my kids were always like, you know, they would take it and not eat it. And I would come back with the most of the food.
But, or they trade it for like the Oreos or something,
yeah,
right?
And, you know,
lunch table.
And I guess in my opinion is that, you know, because all my kids have then came back around to being foodies. They're all like super healthy foodies now, but I think they have to experiment and they have to, you know, learn and see what the effects of eating like that can be.
Well, yeah, that's definitely true. And it happens. And it's also important not to make unhealthy foods off limits, because
right.
that just creates a cycle of you know, they want it more because they can't have it.
Exactly.
But it's okay to include treats once in a while in the lunch. That's totally fine.
So give us a couple of ideas of some recipes you might recommend that are easy for parents.
Sure.
Meatless.
Right, because of course it has to be convenient for the parents too. If you can't do it the night before or quickly in the morning, you know, it's not going to happen, right? And the kids are
pretty much
going to school with the lunch money to get whatever's on online in the cafeteria, which is hopefully a good option. But you know, if you want to send them with a packed lunch, then it's important to have some convenient, you know, options. So, you know, the classic, you know, sandwich is always an option, but it's really important to make sure that it doesn't get too boring, at least if, you know, you
right.
want your kids to be adventurous eaters. So you can do a spin on classic peanut butter and jelly. Pack some fruit in there. Peanut butter and banana is always a popular option, but my favorite is peanut butter and peach. Like peaches that are in season right now.
No.
It's just as sweet as jelly, you know, and you've got the fiber and all the other nutrients in there from the peaches.
Never in a million years would I have thought of that, but the minute
said
it, I went, wow.
It's delicious, definitely. And if you can't send peanut butter to school, which is totally understandable, a lot of schools can't allow peanut butter, Sun Butter is a really great alternative. It's usually found near the peanut butter or sometimes it's in the health food aisle. And it's made out of sunflower seeds, and it tastes a lot like peanut butter, but it's allergen-free.
And, you know, an almond butter is another option. There's some really good almond butters out there.
Yeah, and you can make your own. Just you toast the nuts in the oven and let them cool, grind them in the food processor, a little salt, that's it.
It's not that hard, right?
Mm-hmm. No, not that hard. But I've got some other options, you know, for keeping the Meatless Monday lunch interesting. We have a lot of recipes for wraps on meatlessmonday.com. You know, a wrap is really easy. And you can just basically pack all the veggies you want in there, right? And,
yeah.
and it's this fun little wrap package that the kids like to eat. So we've got like Asian tofu wraps on the site, Chipotle harvest wraps, which are great for this time of year. Get some roasted squash and bell peppers in there. We've got a ratatouille wrap. You know, kids love ratatouille with tomatoes. So those are some really good options. And another favorite of mine is a chickpea salad sandwich. It's just like tuna salad. You might put, you know, a little chopped onion, chopped celery in there.
Yeah.
But you use chickpeas instead of the tuna. And then you've got all the great benefits of the beans with the fiber and the protein. And you can put it in a wrap or put it on a sandwich or just send it in a little container with a spoon and maybe some crackers.
Get really out. Stuff. I have never thought of that. And I mean, I still eat tuna. I buy the special, you know, the tuna that's, you know, line caught or whatever once in a while because I really... And I've made a tempeh salad very similar to a chicken or a tuna salad. But, geez, chickpea salad, what a good idea.
Yeah, we've got a recipe for that on thekidscookmonday.org, the other campaign that I mentioned.
All right.
We've got chickpea salad sandwiches, and they're really popular. Really
I'm all over that, and I know you'll share a post with us like you always do, and they're wonderful.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, and congratulations, and looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Vibrant health and beauty radiates from the inside out. Get your glow on with Green Diva's health and beauty tips, from natural skincare to creating healthier habits that make us sparkle.
All right, we have the lovely mummy greenist, Rachel Lincoln Sarnoff, who's going to talk to us a bit about her experience with henna. Hey, Rachel.
Yeah. Hi, how are you, Meg? Good to talk with you.
Good. Now, talk to us. Tell me what's going on with the henna thing here.
So I have sort of resisted the fact that I was getting white hairs by plucking them for a long time. And my hairstylist would say, oh, you cannot do that. And, you know, that's just horrible. They're going to come back thicker and they're going to come back. And it's true. They don't come back thicker, but they do kind of poke out more.
Yeah, that's
funny. So And my hairstylist is originally, her family is from Morocco. So she remembered her mother doing a lot of henna, and she was actually using henna on a few of her clients who were breast cancer survivors and didn't want to expose themselves to additional potentially toxic chemicals through hair dye.
Right on.
So we started talking about it, and I decided to embark on the henna experiment. So here's the thing that you need to know about henna. So hair dye is like paint, right? You just paint it on to whatever surface, and it covers anything underneath. Henna is like a stain. So imagine if you're staining wood, the color of the wood, the underlying wood, is going to affect the final color of the stain that you're looking at. So it's not like hair dye where you can go into the store and look at a box and say, I want that color, because henna really doesn't work like that. You really have to strand test, and you have to determine what color is the best for you. And it's a bit of a process, let me tell you.
Yeah. Wow.
Have you ever tried it?
I haven't. And, you know, it's funny. And henna is for lighter color hair, right?
Henna can be, actually, they have a nude henna, which doesn't have any color in it at all, which is the first one that I tried. And my hair is very fine and thin. And so I was trying it to see what it did to the texture of my hair. And what I found is it made it really, really soft and thicker. So that was a bonus for me. Then I was like, okay, I'm hooked. I need to figure out the color part.
Okay.
So in terms of the color, you can do everything from black to blonde, apparently. I haven't actually seen anybody do blonde, but apparently you can do all of those colors. And I'm using an organic henna, which is pure plant color. I've heard that there are some hennas that are actually, you know, it says henna on the box, but really it's, you know, chemical hair dye like everything else.
Aww.
So it's just a little bit of henna in it too.
Don't
yeah.
I hate that.
But this, I know, greenwashing, even on henna. But this henna that I'm using it's chemical-free. It's like a powder, and you mix it with water, and it turns bright green, and it smells like alfalfa. Like, it smells like a freshly cut field. It's really fragrant.
I have this, and I only bought it by accident, by default, because my stuff wasn't there. So I bought this stuff with henna. Supposed to be volumizing shampoo with henna, and it does have a kind of a different smell. I'm like, okay, you know, I don't love it necessarily, but my hair is kind of fluffy and happy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and you know, some people love the scent. I happen to love it. I've walked into places right after I've done the henna and had people say, "Oh my god, that your hair! What perfume are you wearing? You smell amazing!" And I'm like, "It's my henna, my hair.
It's my hair."
People hate it. Like, there's other stylists in, you know, the salon, and I have it done in the salon, and they just really don't like the smell of it. They're used to the chemical smells of hair dyes, and they don't like that alfalfa smell. But so just in a nutshell, so if you are thinking about doing it, the thing you need to know is that one great bonus to henna is that it doesn't strip your underlying hair color.
Right.
So as it fades out, you're not going to have the lighter color. And that was really important to me because, you know, I don't have a ton of gray, and I didn't want to have the line where my hair color had faded and my hair was growing in darker.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is there's various ways that you can adjust the color. So henna is red and indigo is, you know, darker, like a darker color. And then you can add something called amla, which takes the red out and makes it more brown. So you need to kind of experiment with those different formulations. And there's a lot online. And I have a whole thing at mommygreenest.com. If you search henna, you could see my process. I photographed my hair and my gray before. I photographed it after. I photographed it, you know, with the different color formulations. I finally have the one that I love. And one cool thing about it, too, is that my little gray hairs are now, they're like bright, you know, they're kind of like highlights. Like,
I am going pretty gray now. Like, my daughter, I took my 22-year-old to get her wisdom teeth out. And she was all stoned on the... you know, still quite stoned on the anesthesia. And she came out and she's like, oh, Mommy, I love your silvery hair.
And I thought, like, oh, I don't love it quite so
yeah.
much.
But, you know, I'm really decided to embrace it over the last couple of months.
Good. Yeah.
And I've told my hair guy, who's been trying to talk me out of this on and off for years, and I finally did it. And I think I have to try the henna now. Now, how difficult is it once you mix your formulation? When you rinse it in? How do you use it?
Okay, here's my high recommendation to you is have it done in a salon. And not because you can't do it at home. Plenty
right.
of people henna their hair at home.
Right.
But because you have the potential to make a huge mess. It doesn't behave like hair dye in that it's, you know, it's clumpy. It drips. My hairstylist says it, and it's great. You know, she puts it on. I just sit there for like an hour. Some people leave it on for 3 hours. I didn't find a real difference in my color. So I just kind of started with a half an hour and then went to an hour, and it's perfect. But do it in a salon and just what we do is we book a half an hour appointment, and then she sees a client in between, and then we book the other half.
Yeah.
It's a really great thing to try, but you have to make a commitment to it because you can't like then go to your hairstylist and have it stripped back out. It really is like a stain. It has to wear off of your hair. You can add more henna to it. That's one thing that's different. You know, when you are dyeing your hair, you don't want to over dye it because there's chemicals in there that can make your hair weak and break.
Right.
With henna, it's actually a conditioning treatment. So if you come out and it's too red, you can go back in the next day and have another layer of a darker henna put on top of it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, I'm doing it.
Give it a try.
I'm going to do it. Well, thank you. Go ahead.
I have to say, I think gray hair is beautiful, you know, when it like comes in. Mine happen to be just like little spikes right now. But when I get a nice stripe, I'm going to hold it. I'm going to keep that going because I love that look. So if you have that working for you, you know, don't let me change your mind.
No, I just think it's a transitional thing because I am going to end up with a very strange, you know, striped head pretty soon. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm how it goes. And check out mommygreenest.com because I've got a whole guide there that you can read.
And I know you're going to share some of it with our site and our readers too. Thank you so much, Rachel. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Talk to you. Bye.
Are you sparkling yet? Well, you will be. For information on this segment and lots of other healthy green living information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
President Barack Obama has taken a stand, demanding action to reduce global warming, and that the price for doing nothing about climate change is too high. More on that after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
Recently, President Obama made climate change a priority, stating, "If you agree with me, then I need you to act," reminding everyone who represents you at every level of government that there is no contradiction between a sound environment and a strong economy, and that sheltering future generations against the ravages of climate change is a prerequisite for your vote. The president is taking the issue to the people and demanding that when it's time to vote, we think green, not just red and blue. As with all things in politics, a battle looms over jobs, industry, and taxes. But as the president said, will we have the courage to act before it's too late? I'm Bill Curtis, and Earth Matters.
Okay, so this guy really is a rock star. I mean, you know, he does work for Rolling Stone, but he's not a musician. For me, he's a rock star hero journalist. He's an award-winning journalist and author. He is a contributing editor of Rolling Stone. Among other things, one of the books that he's written is Big Coal, The Dirty Secret Behind America's Energy Future. So this guy is, you know, one of my heroes. I'm still in awe. I'm not worthy. He had an hour to sit down with President Obama exclusively and also traveled with him to Alaska and did a wonderful report, but also a sort of documentary report video. I'm probably mashing that up, but it's really, really well done and very worth watching. Jeff Goodell, people. Jeff Goodell. The crowd goes wild. Hey, Jeff.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so I'm being a little goofy. What can I say? I really, really was very impressed with the work that you've done on this. But I got to say, the exclusive thing, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was, kind of remarkable moment to be able to sit alone in a classroom in Alaska and spend a little more than an hour kind of one-on-one asking the president kind of whatever I wanted to ask him, which was incredible.
And as you put it, you were able to really drill down into some detail, and you did not mince words or sugarcoat it. And there's in the video, there's a section, a segment of you walking with President Obama, and you're just like, doesn't this stuff scare the shit out of you? That's an awesome thing to ask the president. And he just chuckles. Yeah. He just chuckles, and he's like, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, as he said, you know, he sees a lot of stuff that comes across his desk that scares the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And climate change is just one of them. But what I really was interested in talking to him about in that question, and that's just sort of the kind of tail end of it, but, you know, is to what degree he feels it's his role to really fully articulate, you know, the threats and risks of climate change that are coming and what role he feels it's his to play as being a kind of cheerleader and optimist. I think because a lot of scientists that I talk to who understand the threats of climate change and what's coming with sea level rise and drought and things like that, you know, it's pretty scary stuff. And, you know, to what degree do you really articulate that for the American public as the president of the United States, you know? And
Right. One
of the extraordinary things on this trip is that he did come very close to, it's the closest he's ever come to using what you could call apocalyptic rhetoric. I mean, one of the speeches in Alaska, he was really laid it out in ways that I'd never heard him do before.
Well, yeah, and it's shared very well, not only in your report, but in his own words, in the video and in his answers to you, which were, you know, it did seem like a rather candid time. He seemed to be, you know, well, he seemed like his guard was down. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's just really, really good at this stuff, but.
Yeah, he's really good at this stuff.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think it also, I really walked away from, you know, this report feeling like he really does care.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so just to be clear, the White House, you know, said you have this hour or so with the president, and they set no ground rules. They didn't ask me what I was going to ask, and we knew that it was good. The idea was this would be a conversation about climate change and energy, and it was, so he had, the president did not know what I was going to ask him, and so it was all new to him. And I was really struck by the thoughtfulness and knowledge in his answers. I mean, I've spent many years covering climate change and energy things, and I can really tell when people kind of understand something and when they just sort of half understand it.
Yeah,
and
no, he
the
gets
president,
it.
You know, really gets this.
Well, and you really did not soften the blow on this, you know, the sort of contradiction of the Arctic drilling, you know, him being, you know, saying one thing and then allowing Arctic drilling, which, you know, he articulates pretty carefully how that happens.
Yeah, I mean, he has a fundamentally different view about how you deal with this problem than a lot of environmentalists who have, you know, for justifiable reasons, looked at this drilling and thought that this is kind of, if you want to take the threat of climate change that seriously, why are you allowing drilling to go on? You need to shut this kind of thing down. But, you know, the president really has this belief that the way to address use of fossil fuels is not from shutting down the supply side, because it's a global market, and if you shut down drilling in the Arctic, it's just going to get more oil out of the Middle East or something, but to really reduce the demand side. And if you look at his the kind of policies that he's pushed during his time in office, it's all been about reducing demand.
Yeah, well, I can't say I disagree, and he also talks about how the fact that he's got a big picture, he's got a lot to take care of, and he's not alone. And there's no, like, it's a, you know, he said democracy is a slow-moving beast.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, one of the, you know, I think that the hopeful thing that came out of this interview with him is that he really understands the sort of political strategy of this and is really working and playing kind of nine-dimensional chess to try to make real progress on this. Yeah. But on the other hand, people could justifiably say, look, this is not, this is too much of an emergency. We need more than sort of political strategy. We need, you know, a dramatic revolution right now. And, you know, the President Obama is not that person. He's playing nine-dimensional chess here. And, you know, I think he's proven on other complex issues that this works out and that he's made amazing progress in complicated ways.
I'm not entirely sure he has much choice given, I mean, and one of the aspects of this Arctic drilling, you know, controversy, if you will, is that he inherited it. I mean, this was something that people don't understand had been in play since the Bush administration, and he's got to deal with the things that he that come into his presidency from the past.
Exactly. I mean, these permits were sold out during the Bush administration, and in order to actually stop the drilling here, they would have essentially had to buy back some of these permits, which would have cost billions of dollars. And you know, and you know, time has shown now that, you know, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks after we left Alaska, Shell pulled out of the Arctic and has basically put off plans indefinitely to continue drilling up there. And that's partly because of what they found and the difficulty of drilling up there, partly because of the low oil prices.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean that nobody's ever going to drill up there again, but for the foreseeable future, it's kind of off the table.
Well, we'd like to think it's because there were, you know, there was a huge outcry of people in kayaks and hanging off bridges saying, please, Shell, no.
Yeah, I think that helps, for sure.
It does. So, okay, so Jeff, I mean, come on, you got to hang out with President Obama. What struck you? You said there were two things that you walked away from in particular, at least around the issues. You know, one being that he's laser focused on Paris and doing whatever he has to do to try to get everybody together in Paris, and that the other thing was that it's probably not enough, which is kind of sad. On a personal level, how now you can let your guard down here a little bit because this is not your journalistic report. Give us.
Well, you're asking what how I you know felt when I walked away from all this. You know, I was very, 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 as I mentioned earlier, impressed with the president's knowledge and awareness of, I think, complex science issues. Some of the stuff that didn't get into the interview from a walk that he and I took. You know, I asked him about some latest climate science papers, and he was fully aware of them and the implications. And, you know, when you think about the amount of things that's on the president's plate from, you know, Putin to Iran to the economy to Congress and all this, you know, the fact that he's paying this close of attention to climate stuff is real evidence that this is a real thing for him. I mean, I came away with there more convinced than ever that that he really understands the implications of this and it's a very high priority in the remaining of his term. But that said, I also came away seeing and understanding even more deeply than I had before that, you know, this is not a problem like, say, gay marriage, for example, where, you know, you have a change in law that if you can, you know, get that that past, it just changes the dynamic of everything, and in a certain way kind of solves the problem.
Right, like you can just make a federal law that says, here, deal with it. You know, this is the way
it is. And you can't just make a federal law that says, okay, no more CO2 into the atmosphere or, you know, whatever. You know, this is a, you know, long, long a problem that's going to be with us for, you know, the rest of the century. And, you know, I think Obama is just the first in a long line of presidents who are going to have to, you know, kind of become climate warriors, because I think that is going to be the story of our time in the coming decades.
Oh, that was a soundbite. I picked that up and made a note about you had said that in your documentary, your commentary about it. And I love that line. I think they are going to have to be climate warriors. And it isn't just about, even if in the United States, if we could make a law, you know, for some reason we could get everybody to get on board, which is never going to happen. But, you know, then you have China and then you have Russia and then you have other folks that may not have this as a priority, may not understand it, may not be able to do. And so it is about being like a global cheerleader for climate change.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you know, there's a lot of optimism right now in the sense that, you know, clean energy prices are falling so fast. China's huge commitment to solar.
Yeah.
You know, the entire world is really coming to understand what is happening and where this is going, with not just with climate science and the risks of that, but also with the benefits of clean energy, with jobs and with, you know, manufacturing and technology and everything that comes along with clean energy. We look at what's happening in the auto industry. You know, electric cars are, you know, certainly going to be the future. That's gaining huge amounts of momentum. I mean, all this stuff is moving in the right direction. The problem is that, you know, it's just not moving fast enough. And even with this kind of acceleration that we're seeing, it's still, you know, the dramatic impacts of climate change are here with us now, and they're not going to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah, that was a theme, and of course it's a theme in all the news that crosses my computer, whatever, is that every day there's like some new report that says, okay, it's happening faster than we calculated. It's accelerating, and it is a little terrifying, but heartening to know that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially with things like glacial melts and things like that, all of that seems to be all the error bars are pointing kind of in one direction there, and that it's happening faster than we had anticipated a decade or two ago. And that has a lot of implications for weather and for sea level rise and things like that.
Right. And of course, there are national security issues, which is just something else that you touched on. I guess Susan Rice was with him on this excursion, partly because there were five Chinese warships.
Yeah, in the Arctic Sea, essentially right below us where we were flying, which I didn't really realize. I only learned this like the day or two after I was up there. I didn't know this in real time. Or I would have actually asked the president about it, but I didn't realize it until later. But, you know, the security implications for what's happening in the Arctic are huge, you know, because the Russians especially think of the Arctic as their backyard.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of legal complexities given the failure of the U.S. to sign the Law of the Sea, which is a kind of treaty that allows this kind of equal apportionment of some of the resources up there. And it's the opening of a whole new ocean. And we have the United States has very little capacity to operate up there because we've kind of given up all of our, we only have one icebreaker left.
Yeah.
We've sort of abandoned, it was, you know, a big theater in the Cold War, but we've kind of abandoned it, and the Russians haven't.
And that's just one aspect. I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, in the Middle East, water, oil, I mean, there's all kinds of resources that people may end up clamoring over and creating all kinds of disruption about, because, well, you know, if water becomes scarce, then people are going to get cranky.
Well, I think that's what you're seeing with the, I mean, I think the Syrian refugee crisis that we're seeing in Europe right now is a really good preview of the kind of thing that we're going to see a lot more of. And you know, we talk about climate change, we talk about drought and food supplies and things like that, but it's really the implications of that and the dislocation of people and that is what's really, the dangerous thing in a way, and the thing that's going to make climate change so difficult to deal with is because it's going to contribute to all kinds of other kinds of political problems and political instabilities.
Yeah, and we're just scratching the surface. I could talk to you for an hour, Jeff. I love the work that you do and the way that you bring it out for all of us to understand more of what's going on with climate change in particular, and that you took some time to talk to us today. I'm really very grateful. So hopefully we'll get to talk soon. In the meantime, people can go to rollingstone.com. And how best to find it? I clicked on politics and went down the sidebar and found it. Is there an easier way to find this, this beautiful long article? So, you know, give yourself a little bit of time. The video is only about 9 minutes, and really you should watch that if nothing else. But how?
Yeah, the video is really great.
It's very, very well done. Is there any easy way to find it, or should they just go through Rolling Stone and go through the politics
page?
Well,
the Rolling Stone website is always changing things around and updating the stories and moving things around. So the easiest thing is just to Google Rolling Stone, President Obama, climate, and it'll come right up.
Yes, it will. Thanks again, Jeff, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Green Divas radio show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.